back in how a Highlander thinks. If there's a higher ground to take, then Simon Fraser will find a way.
Did you warn St. Clair directly?
Fermoy has a general's ear, so it's Fermoy I must persuade. It wouldn't be wise to go around him. It could be very bad for my men. But he's convinced an attack will come by land and not from across the water.
That reminds me of the Battle of Singapore. They're the other way around. In World War II, the British were stationed there. General Percival had his guns aimed at the sea, convinced that the surrounding jungles were too dangerous and dense to penetrate.
He was proved to be wrong.
The Japanese cut their way through the jungles and attacked his defences at the weakest point, by land. And seeing is believing. Of course, by that point, it was too late.
Seeing is believing? You've given me an idea.
All the way from Providence, Rhode Island, coming to you live in the Minute with Mary studio. Welcome to Outlander Cast. It's a podcast dedicated to the show Outlander on Stars. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. My name is Mary Larson.
My name is Blake, and I just want to say that I really appreciate our listeners.
Oh, good.
Because we have Maureen on Facebook as she's watching us live right now as we're recording this. She put LOL to Blake for choosing that clip for all the history porn.
I was shocked that of everything was the clip that you chose as well.
Oh man, of course I had to pick that. If you know me, you know Mary and Blake Media.
You know I didn't pick the clip.
No, definitely did not pick that. Well, you know, another thing too was I picked it was because there were actually some people in the comments who left it on our feedback thread. They were like, wait, why did they call this episode Singapore? Like, I don't get it. And so I just,
So they like missed that whole bit.
Some people missed it.
Okay.
And I feel like it's kind of a big deal.
Then good job, see? Blake. You good see? Job for
yes,
explaining.
It was the history porn. I totally agree. But yes. It's also, you know, we got to make sure we're all clarified here.
I appreciate that. Clarifies through Claire.
Clarifications. That's right. We used to call those clarifications. That's right. I forgot about that.
I got
that.
You, baby. I got you.
Awesome.
Well, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. I do want to remind everyone who is listening to this in the future that we actually go live for our podcast episodes. If you are not yet getting our emails, you just simply go to maryandblake.com and a pop-up's going to come up and it's going to ask you, hey, you want some emails? And if you, of course, listen to Outlander, you're going to click, yeah, I want the Outlander one. There's also like the general Mary and Blake ones. There's Bridgerton and Harry Potter to choose from. But make sure you definitely click Outlander because you'll want to know if we go live and you can catch it. We want to thank our friends who are joining us live right now. We're at a different time because there's storms. And so just thank you to our friends who are coming on in. Let us know where you're tuning in from. And let's get into the show.
Oh, by the way,
yeah,
I got a surprise for you.
Oh my gosh, I know. I had this suggestion.
I got a surprise for you. And this is going to come as a shock to many people because a lot of people know that I do not like to fiddle. We have a system. We don't mess around.
I'm the opposite. I'm like, let's be spontaneous.
Changing everything every 5 minutes.
I asked this 30 minutes ago. I was like, Blake, I want this in the show.
And despite the fact that I like stable things.
Yeah.
I have capitulated to my wife, and we're changing for the first time in probably almost a decade to get into the show song.
Here you go. The get into the show music has changed.
All right, Marvin, what
that
do you think?
That, of course, is the music as Bree is driving along, heading on over to the dam through the Highlands. I cannot wait. I know I've said it every single episode. So this is another fifth episode of my saying it. Bam McCreary, we need your soundtrack, please.
Yes.
Please give us a soundtrack because it's so flipping good. But, of course, that is the sound. And thank goodness there was parts of the show where people weren't talking over it, so we could snag a little bit. So yes, there you on go. Before we get into the episode details, we do want to, of course, remind you that you can follow Blake and I on Instagram and YouTube and Facebook. Just search Mary and Blake. We do have an exclusive Facebook community for all of our listeners and friends. Just search Mary and Blake. It will be the Facebook group that pops on up. We would love to chat with you there. And let's get into the details, Blake. And honestly, friends, like, now that you've explained why you chose that clip to explain Singapore, I appreciate it, Blake.
Oh, thank
you. Really, really do, because I was sitting here saying, come on, man. But no, you're right. Like, a lot of people didn't know why it was called Singapore.
Right.
And it's a blink and you miss it kind of thing. Sure. You know, Claire's just filling in, oh, here's some backstory. And yes, you're smart. You should be checking all angles of attack. But had you missed that one word, Singapore, and you just took it that she had World War II knowledge, it would have been gone. So I appreciate that, Blake. Thank you. So tell me more details in addition to the title.
Well, we did obviously change the music going into the episode, and for
we don't even know what the music is called yet.
I don't even know yet. I couldn't even tell you the name of the song. Doesn't even. I don't care. I like it that much. But obviously, it is the song that was actually playing while Bree was going over the dam. And
where's that? While the host isn't listening, because I just said all that.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness gracious!
This is the first time.
That's the first time
I'm really proud of myself.
I've ever gotten this.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Where is it? Here it is.
How to tell when the hosts aren't listening.
Oh my goodness gracious. I cannot believe I messed that up like that.
That's all good, Blake. Man. We forgive you.
I was just too busy. I was too excited about the music.
So
here we go.
We've got the title being Singapore.
Yes, the writer was Taylor Mallory. She is a newer writer over the past few years. A lot of new writers on the staff this season.
Agreed.
She, too, is an executive story editor, meaning that she was once a story editor. She's on the way to becoming a full-fledged writer, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And the executive story editor means that you've been writing now for about 3 or 4 years. You've been on a couple of different crews. You've done your
things. You earned your badges.
You've paid your dues.
You're no longer a Cub Scout.
Right. You're the go-between between the showrunner and the writing staff. The writing staff.
You're not a fae. You're not a pixie. You're a knucklevy. Yes.
And you're not quite the new Emily, but you're just above the new Emily.
Yes, yes.
Okay?
Okay.
But yeah, she's the go-between, really, between the showrunners, the staff writers, and also, the people that are on set, that she has to make sure that the story is following the quote unquote Bible of what the show is trying to produce. So that is that. She's also written for the Mysterious Benedict Society. I think that's a Netflix show. She has also written for the show Shadowhunters and Sweet Nothings. And the director was Tracy Deer. And bear with me as I'm looking it up right now. I'm not great here.
It's all right.
She is actually a Mohawk filmmaker.
That's Tracy amazing. Deer.
Isn't that really cool?
That's really, really cool.
Let's see. Where is their director? Here we go. She's directed Three Pines, Rutherford Falls, Hudson and Rex, Mohawk Girls, and a bunch of other stuff too.
Awesome. She did a great job.
She absolutely did.
Oh my gosh. Even I noticed things directorial wise through this episode.
I totally agree. Yeah. And I think we're going to hear a little bit more about that.
Oh, we shall.
When we discuss it. All right, Marvin, your kilt rating. What do you got for your kilts?
I am giving to this kilt. I'm giving this rating, this kilt.
Yeah.
A 4.8. And I love having difference of opinions, as we are going to talk about in the listener feedback episode, because I really enjoyed this episode.
Yes.
I enjoyed it a lot. It made me smile so many times. Mm-hmm. So 4.8.
All right. For me, I am going to give it a 4.68. I liked it better than last episode. I do not like it better than the first two episodes of this season. So I feel like it's in a nice mid space. Mm-hmm. I feel like we're getting there. And as a matter of fact, I think some of the direction is kind of what helps
elevated.
Propel it to where I want it to be. Your kilts. I'm sorry. Your
GBGs. Okay. So my good is the max. I am just here for our time at Lollybrock, whether it is seeing Lollybrock in the background as Jemmy's being dropped off. But honestly, the humor between Roger and Bree, everything with them. So like, hey, deep sigh of a relief. The max are having their moments and we are here for it. I love Mandy. I think she's so sticky cute. I love not wearing underwear. However, not wearing underwear and jeans. A little, I don't know, a little uncomfortable. Scruffy. Yeah. I mean, it's one thing when you're wearing skirts and everything, but yeah, you know, you do you, Brie. You try some things out. Okay, my bad, rat stew.
Oh, yeah. That does not look appetizing.
My stomach was gurgling with Williams, and I didn't even eat it. I didn't even eat the darn stew, and I was all set. And then my grate is every scene with Ian, but seeing him smile.
Yeah.
There was bye, Ian, hi, Ian, and smile, Ian. And he was just Ian. He was just solid gold in this episode, and to see this weight come off of his shoulders and all of these moments with Ian have just been so needed, and I was here for it. So everything with Ian was my great. How about you?
Yeah. All right. For me, let's see. My good. All right. My good was this. The Max. Again.
Oh,
everything
yes.
with the Max.
Yeah.
It is the best thing to happen to this show in quite a while. Meaning getting Roger and Bree out of the Ridge, out of that time.
Them have their own rooms.
Putting them into our current time, and allowing them to be characters that I feel like they're more natural to be. And I think I figured it out. Every time I watched Roger in the 1700s, it was just like a dude pretending.
And you know what? That's how he felt.
Yeah. And I agree. Mm-hmm. I totally agree. And now that I get a chance to see Roger in the current time, well, at least in the 80s, right?
Yeah.
It just feels more natural to who the character is, at least the way that he was presented to us. Mm-hmm. It just feels better. It feels like he can be himself more. And I also think that the show is allowing Roger to have more than just...
Roger is getting Dad of the Year awards.
Yeah. I think they're allowing Roger and Bree, by mm-hmm. the way. I think Bree, I also got the same thing from her. The thing I got from her was that she was just pretending to be her mom in many ways in the 1700s. And I think it's because they just didn't have enough time, or they didn't allow for Roger and Bree, number one, to have any chemistry to themselves, or two, to have any chemistry with their parents. It was always just, they were always just there, and it felt like it was obligatory. Whereas now it feels like it's a natural, cohesive part of the storytelling that's being connected to Jamie and Claire, mm-hmm. as opposed to being shoved down their throats.
Yeah.
And I have to say, the conversation between Roger and Jemmy outside of wherever the heck they were, where it said keep out,
mm-hmm.
phenomenal.
Agreed.
I loved that scene. I couldn't get enough. It made me smile as a dad. And it's a fun, it's an interesting way to get some, as it was said earlier by Maureen, it's an easy way to inject some history porn into it by allowing why can't we speak Gaelic? Like, is that bad? Are you mad at me? Like, mm-hmm. it's just another way to inject it into there. So I really like that. My bad. Everything with the Johnsons, or I think that was their name. I couldn't tell you.
Who?
Is that what the people that they were staying with? William
and... Oh, the murderers?
The murderer.
Like, okay, yeah.
What are we doing?
Blake does not like the monster of the week. We know this.
What are we doing? Like, you knew that they were going to be bad people. You knew, like, it's... Instantly, I was like, these people ain't on the up and up, man.
You know, this show teaches you... There's some weird people in living in the woods.
Yeah. Like, what are we doing? Sure, it's William's first kill. Yeah. But, and what?
Oh, she didn't have a two screen. But yeah,
sorry.
And that's what I was saying, because as this started to happen, I think it was even just when they were eating the stew, you were like, what are we doing here? These people suck already. This is it. And I said, you just gotta wait. You just gotta wait, Blake. Like, you just gotta get through it. And then, of course, when they come downstairs and William's fighting, Blake's like, come on. And I was like, well, this is important for William's development. Sounds. Those are the sounds.
Okay, it's his first kill and like, whatever. And if that is the intent of having those people there, then it happened way too quick. And also, he was all struck. He was upset about it for like 5 minutes and then they moved on.
Okay.
Like, that doesn't mean anything, right? And if you say, okay, well, this is about Rachel and Denny or Denzel, whatever the heck his name is.
Yeah, his name's.
Getting to understand William more. We don't need any of that crap for them to end up where they went to, right? Like, at the crossroads.
Well, I think it was an interesting conversation for the Quakers to be talking about, you know, killing in general and how, you know, Denny's being called to war.
Totally
and then
agree.
William having the conversation about in war there is killing and like, if you don't want to like kill because you're on opposing sides, how do you feel about killing a murderer? So it was
totally
a very
agree.
Interesting thing to then be put into this situation with the people who he's having this conversation about so he can have this kind of deep experience with the hunters.
I totally agree. Mm-hmm. Understood. And I agree with the conversation and the...
But I would agree with you that it was quick and just gross and like
just
almost...
What are we doing?
Yeah.
It was so telegraphed.
Makes you not want to stop for directions, I'll tell you what.
ever. I also have another little bad.
A
wee bad.
Okay.
Not a great job by good old Raj outside the house.
Oh my God, that sucked. Don't worry, everybody. I'll go look.
I'm going to take care of this. Don't you worry.
That was almost my bad, too. I was thinking, where's his big stick? I forget what it's called, but I feel like there's a big stick in like every Scottish person's house that's like a club kind of thing that you have in case invaders come. Like, we had one. We had a big stick.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think it was like the part of the taken off the wood part of an axe.
Yeah.
But like that was in my house. And when my dad would hear about ruffians outside in my like normal suburban city neighborhood, my dad would walk out with this big stick thing. And I just I feel like that's something that like everybody would have. Or like in the 80s, Roger would have had a baseball bat.
Yeah.
Like what grown adult in the 80s doesn't have some kind of a wooden stick weapon? That you walk outside when there's an intruder, right? Like if you're like, okay, I'm going to go look outside.
I know what I already have.
I know, you'd grab your sword.
I have my sword.
Yeah, so you'd walk out with your sword. And so Roger takes like 2 steps out, looks around. But in my mind, he thought, oh, forgot my stick. You know, this is a big yard.
And then he goes out there and he looks around and he doesn't even leave the porch.
No.
Hey, wait, no, we're good. All right,
I don't want to dirty my slippers.
Archbug, is that you? I know it's you.
So it baffles me that he wouldn't have had a tool and other stuff readily available.
Just whatever. Get a fork for all I care.
If he had something and he didn't even go far, I still would have been fine. Because I was like, all right.
You got a golf club?
You got it, honestly.
You know Roger's a golfer.
No.
He's got at least a putt. He's got at least a putter.
He's got a book.
Yeah.
I'll throw this at you, Knuckle V.
All right. So my great, though, my great, and Mary, you've already kind of said it, is the directing.
Yes.
I thought that the directing, in particular, the composition and the camera work in this episode was great. Lots of good movement. And... also, it was the conversations, whether it was the setup, and like Bree talking to the Stones, you know, at the end of the episode,
Cairn.
The Cairn. Excellent stuff. Or the shots of the British through the scope that the general is looking through, like that fiery red and the silhouettes of the British. And it was menacing. Like,
it really was.
It was scary. And you can imagine how when people are looking at this through that scope, they're like, oh, yeah, that's not good.
Yeah, like, we gotta go.
It could have been really dumb. It could have been like, hey, guys, with like a little British guy and like a gun. But like, no, it was menacing.
It was.
Which was really great. Or whether it was Bree in the tunnels where it was dark and the lighting and she's got the match. It reminded me of a little bit of a horror film. The way that she's walking through, like, the descent.
It was so good.
Right? And then there's this point when she's looking up into the turbines or wherever it was, and there's this beautiful shot of Bree that's, like, this little teeny tiny thing, and they have this massive whatever the heck that was. Mm-hmm. Just a beautiful shot.
Yes.
It felt right. Even Bree walking over the dam. And then you notice that in order to give you a finishing point at the back end of the dam. They actually parked the truck right at where the opening is. So it looked like a like a final end. Like it gave it like a real good perspective.
Yes.
And just these little things that pop up and you look at them. And again, I always say this, your brain doesn't recognize it. I'm sorry, you don't recognize it, but your brain does.
Yeah.
Love, 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 love. Also, I have to give a lot of credit to the conversation between Ian and Claire he's talking about not being able to have a baby and the spirit thing, and my spirit can't overcome hers, and like we all know that's trash, but in reality, when the way that he's looking at it, like there is a possibility, and he's going to his aunt, who actually knows what the heck she's talking about.
Yes,
and he's desperate, and I love that moment because, he looks at her. He says, "I don't know if I can have another kid. Like, I don't know if I can even have a wife. I don't know if I can do any of this stuff. Is there something wrong with me?"
Yeah,
and that moment for Claire and Ian, I think, is really important. It helps, I think, the viewer understand more of Ian and why he is the way that he is, more than a lot of what they've done since that episode of The Hour of the Wolf. Mm-hmm. Like, that's some really good stuff there.
Agreed.
Really
agreed.
Good. And the conversation itself was framed very simply. It was just the two of them. There was no fancy camera work. It was just two people, two actors with lines, go. And I liked that. I thought that was really nice.
It was, you know, and just, I know that we're not necessarily into the full episode discussion, but just that scene, as parents who, as many listeners know, Blake and I had two miscarriages, a couple, like a year and a half ago, 2 years ago at this point. I've lost time. The panorama does that to you. But obviously, Claire knows about what it's like through, of course, the loss of faith. But, you know, for her to say that this happens so frequently for reasons that we cannot comprehend and that people don't really talk about it that much. And I just feel like every person who has gone through, whether it is infertility or loss of miscarriage or infant loss, people who just mourn that they haven't even had the opportunity with or without a partner or their life to be able to have a child and questioning, you know, is this something that can happen in my future? I felt it for all of us. And I thought that Katrina Balfe acted so beautifully with having to talk about this sensitive topic that, as her character Claire, probably still gets sad about and can cry about, and yet she was able to be so tender and kind of open up Ian's eyes about how common this is. And I just felt like it was a champion moment for Claire, for anyone who suffered some kind of loss or longing. And so I just thought it was a really, really poignant moment that I know I'm not alone in feeling it in your heart.
Sure. Okay. So we have our recap that I forgot to read, by the way.
Let's do it.
Do you want to read it or you want me to read it?
You can read it because I don't have my iPad.
All right,
so I'd have to read it on my small witty bitty phone.
So I apologize, everybody that's listening. Normally we do the recap and then we do get into the whole thing, but I forgot to do it. So my fault.
It's okay.
All right, Angela gives us this. She says, in this episode, Claire compares Ticonderoga to the Battle of Singapore to explain the oddball title. However, one of the meanings of Singapore is that starting a journey and ending up in a place or situation you did not expect. This applies to all four of our storylines, peppered with echoes to the pasts. The Frasers must postpone Scotland as they now find themselves conscripted defending a vulnerable Fort Ticonderoga. Jamie tries to convince his obnoxious general that the British force led by his cousin, real-life General Simon Fraser, can drag... His cousin from... Your cousin from Scotland.
Your cousin from Scotland.
Who's wicked good at war.
Wicked, you're welcome. No, it's Wicked Bonnie. Wicked Bonnie at war.
Okay, continue.
Sorry. Can drag Canada up Sugarloaf Hill, and Claire becomes fast friends with Quaker Doc Henry Hunter. Of course, Jamie is right, and they have to evacuate under imminent attack. As William and the Hunters travel north together, a serial-killing couple offers shelter, serves a disgusting bowl of rat stew, and tries to kill them in their sleep. William kills his first man to save them, and Rachel helps him cope in the aftermath. Ian is sent on a mission to his former Mohawk village. When he sees Emily, he apologizes for not giving her bairns. When he asks to meet her son, he discovers his spirit is indeed strong. Or maybe just his swimmers are indeed strong. And the child is actually his, by the way. In an echo to Jamie and Wee William, Ian gives him a name, Ian James.
Love it.
In the 1980 story, a wave of grief hits Bree when she discovers Jimmy has built a cairn for Jamie. She begins the journey of her new job and winds up locked in a tunnel by misogynistic co-workers, where her time travel genetics encounter a wall of ley line energy. Interesting. Boss Lady Bree Boss Lady Bree lays down the law to rob Cameron and his friends. Meanwhile, Mac Daddy Roger becomes angry Roger when Jimmy tells him that his teacher assaulted him for using Gaelic. Book fan favorite Kinky Roger will finally make his presence known on the show, and Litterbug Knucklevy scares Mandy. So that's that.
Thank you, Angela, for sending in that recap. All right. So let's jump on in.
Marvin, I have a question for you. My first question is, they got a lot of different people, lots of different stories, a lot of things happening all at once.
Yes.
I mean, we have Bree and Roger. We got the Hunters and William. We got Ian. Then we got Jamie and Claire. Then we got everything else happening at Ticonderoga. It's essentially five different stories. That is a lot to be happening in one episode.
It is a busy episode.
And I want to get your thoughts on that, because does it do this story justice?
There was one point where I got confused. I think it's when Bree comes out of the, makes it out of the tunnel, and then it's a quick switch over to Fort Ticonderoga with the soldiers.
Yes.
And I didn't really know. I did not think that that was a good transition. I think for the most part, going between all of all these different storylines, they did a good job. That one to me was jarring. Especially because I felt like as Bree didn't really know what was going on, where she was, trying to get her bearings. We as viewers were trying to get our bearings with her, and it was a jolt for me. So aside from that, I think it did hit the nail on the head, where I could seamlessly go through all of the past timelines, all the Fort Ticonderoga-ish Revolutionary War timelines. I was good with that for the most part.
Yeah, I would say that we are, it feels like we are running to get nowhere. Meaning, like, it feels like there are things that are in the book that need to happen in order for things to make sense later on.
Yeah.
So they have to get to all these, like let's make it like a highlight reel. I think they need to get to all these specific highlights.
And this is the episode to do it.
Yeah. It feels like highlights, and there's no real connective tissue until you manufacture some. Right. And the manufactured connective tissue is what is happening between Claire and the surgeon. And then obviously Bree and her co-workers at the dam.
The dudes, the jabronis.
And the funny thing is, Mary, and I might shock you with this.
Okay.
I find myself looking way more forward to the Roger and Bree scenes right now than I do to Jamie and Claire.
I'm so happy.
I'm
just so happy.
The stuff with Jamie and Claire interests me.
Yeah.
But the stuff with Roger and Bree actually feels like characters as opposed to stuff.
I think the other thing is that we've been to war with Jamie and Claire before.
Yeah.
We've done this.
Yeah.
And the Roger Bree situation is uncharted territory. So things are going to happen for Claire and Jamie, but it hasn't been made clear to the viewers what's happening, aside from everybody's kind of like meeting up in different places, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So to me, you know, yeah, I totally agree. You're like, okay, it's wartime again. What else is new? But with Bree and Roger, they've got a whole bunch of things. The housing repairs, the who's leaving the wrappers out situation,
right, right.
The dam, the jabronis, you know, Roger being father of the year, all this kind of stuff. It is uncharted territory. So I think I 100% am happy. I'm not necessarily shocked. I understand why.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would love to delve into what happens even before this episode starts. We of course get the previously on mm-hmm. Outlander recap, and you pointed out Philip Schuyler.
Yes. When they talked, and we forgot about to talk about this in the last episode, they had mentioned General Schuyler, mm-hmm. up at Ticonderoga. And that is actually the Philip Schuyler in Hamilton, and I
the Schuyler sisters work you know, Angelica, Washington. Eliza,
right,
and Peggy.
So that is
it's their dad
who eventually becomes the senator and eventually gives way to Aaron Burr, and you know, so on and so forth.
So it's just really fun because Blake was like, oh, Hamilton.
Yes. Yes.
There is not a cold open in this episode like we've had many in the past where yes. there was like show before the credits. And then, of course, we got new footage in the opening song.
Yes, absolutely.
We got a cool flag shot. We got an airplane being played around. We got Lolly Brock with the car, with Bree and Roger and the cute little lights doing a little cutesy cozy. I don't know. I need to double check. I feel like maybe the water washing face clip was different because they had the water clip with the fire.
Yes.
And then we thought the cannon shot that we saw through the lens different as well. So a few of these were also in this episode, which is really neat.
Yep.
And then, of course, it opens up with the goats on the ledge for the title card. The guy in charge, the French person in charge,
yep.
sounded to me like the aliens from Star Wars who, they're like in Star Wars Episode 1 or 2. I'm trying to figure out which ones they are.
Oh, the Trade Federation.
They were like the Trade Federation. They have like slight French accents and it's very stagnant. And I was like, close your eyes. And you would think it was the Trade Federation people from Star Wars. Like this guy's voice sounded just like them. So as you all know, I point out Adam's apples. I point out all sorts of things. Go back and listen to this guy's voice every time he speaks and he's being rude to Jamie, and just close your eyes and be like, he's from Star Wars. He's totally from Star Wars. Now, Blake.
Yes.
We've gone point by point. We've gone storyline by storyline in the past. I think that this episode, because we're so torn apart, that it would be easiest to go storyline by storyline. And I kind of just, I don't know, national emergency alert. Okay. Do not attempt to travel. Well, we're not. Okay. We're podcasting.
We're getting
leave
emergency alerts.
Sorry, guys. This is why we're podcasting live.
This is why we're podcasting at this moment way earlier than normal because we're getting flood warnings.
There we go. All right. So, all right. We're going to start with William because I'm just like,
yeah, he is right now. Everyone's going to hate me when I say this because I'm sure
nobody's going to hate you.
I'm sure he's one of those guys that everybody just like fawns over. And he's like a fart in the wind right now.
Can you smell it?
Whatever, dude.
What does a fart in the wind even mean? Like, what does that
mean? He's there.
Is that a Boston thing? Is it a Blake thing?
And then it goes away. It goes off to somebody else.
Oh, my God. That is the worst. That is like a new level for you, Blake. Wow, he's a fart in the wind.
But like, I don't mean
my
that
goodness
in a
gracious.
I don't mean it in a bad way.
Okay, well, I don't see how it couldn't be.
I know, I agree.
How about like a perfume in the wind, a nice honeysuckle scent in the wind? Anyway, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
That we've got some meat and potatoes. We got so much time with the Max. We've got things going on in Fort Ticonderoga. That of the storylines, and we're like so invested in everybody else that is why he pales in comparison. When we finally seen Wee Ian smiling, we're like, move over, William. I'm glad you killed the rat people, but like, who cares about you right now? Ian's sperm works! Like, oh my God, his spirit lives. You know, like, we don't care about you, William. So I'm saying that's why we can get him over with.
A winner!
Okay, so let's just deal with, let's get, because I appreciate William, but he's like the weakest storyline now.
In this episode.
And so like, fart in the wind.
Sure.
We're going to accept
it. Wind.
So of course he's having his old conversation. Is it a sin if we take a murderer's life? William's coat color is that deep tealish blue.
Yes, I love it.
And even his like undershirt is this deep bluish color. And I don't know if that was just the in-vogue color. Was it the Pantone color of the year? I don't know. But I love it and I'm here for it because to me, visually, it's connecting him with the Frasers. Mm-hmm. All across time. I'm loving it. The rat stew was super gross. And then, of course, we know what happens. We get the killing, the gross people. He gets them with the poker.
Great,
wonderful.
They're
dead.
I love that for you.
These people have been doing it forever. Are we worried that these people are going to be like an arch bug? Are they going to? Is the lady going to be coming?
It's monster of the week.
Okay, he gives his money to the hunters and he keeps Ian's rosary.
Yes,
that's what we need to be
like. That is definitely getting back into Ian's hands at some point.
Yes,
like that. I think it's Chekhov's rosary beads, they are.
But I'm saying like that was what you know. We get to get out of it. He's feeling well. He's feeling enough of well to kill people and, you know, eat rats.
Oh, Hillary here on Facebook says the teal color goes all the way back to the walls inside of Frank and Claire's Boston home.
Ooh, I dig that. Sorry, I'm just getting messages from my family.
I like it. Everything okay?
I think so.
Are they flooded too?
I mean, they're in a flood zone, so we're going to find out.
All right.
Yay, fair weather.
Live podcasting,
yes, exactly. All right. So do we feel good about moving on from the William aspect and moving on to the hunters?
Yeah. I mean, the William thing is what it is. I mean, if this was a giant part of his makeup in terms of this was his first kill and he feels bad about it or whatever. Yes. They did a really bad executing it.
Well, I mean, or is it that this could be just the beginning, the little pebble, the little snowflake that starts a snowball?
That could be the case.
So I think that's what I'm going to suggest for you, Blake, is not that you just like hate on the William thing, but he is the newest person to you. Mm-hmm. And that this, we're telling you.
No, we're not eating candy. Stop eating candy.
No, sorry.
I'm watching you.
our little ass is... coming to us asking if she can eat some Mike and Ike's. And this is why, ladies and gents, we podcast
when they're sleeping.
8:30 p.m. normally.
Okay, let's hang out with the hunters then.
Yes. Okay, the hunters, by the way, everybody was saying last episode how he looks exactly like John Gray. I actually quite agree. I noticed it this episode. The Denzel, totally a John Gray doppelganger. Like a carbon copy of the guy. Crazy. Totally crazy. And, you know, I kind of liked the back and forth that they had at the end where, you know, she was the sister, what's her
Rachel.
Name? Rachel's calling Denzel a hypocrite. And she's like, well, you know, if I have to go help my pig-headed brother or whatever it was.
If God told you to go to war, then God also told me to, you know, watch you.
And yeah, right. Like, that's all good stuff.
Yes.
That's more than just we're the hunters. We're Quakers and we talk funny. Like,
and then
that's
of course
an actual relationship.
And then you got to see him again later on with Claire, and he's able to throw it down. No, I'm the one with the degree.
Yes.
So I'm going to make the decisions. And for my teammate, eeny, meeny, miny, mo.
Yeah, right.
Thank you, Claire.
Barbara on Facebook says, surely another Volturi member. Sorry.
And then of course, Rachel gets like all the man time, okay? Because she gets to hang out and have this heart-to-heart with William.
Yes.
And of course, they sit down after he's killed. And he opens up. He lets her know this is a big deal.
Yeah.
And then she gets to see Ian, who probably did smell like honeysuckle and not dead rat farts. Oh, my
no,
gosh.
No, that's John. That's William, yeah.
Yeah, William smells like rat farts.
Fat in the wind.
And Ian comes up with all of his little foraging sweeties that found. And Rachel gets all excited to see him as well. And they're like, wait a second, Claire's your aunt.
Yeah.
Cool. We're going to be hanging out.
Yeah. They're buddies. They're going to be more than buddies real soon. Real soon. I will say that I really liked the fact that, as you had mentioned, Mary, the stuff with Denzel, recognizing that Claire actually kind of knows what she's talking about,
mm-hmm.
comes to help her out. And it's important that we kind of get away from the whole Claire and Jamie thing for a little bit so that we can explore Claire's voice through another person's lens and how Denzel is going to allow for the narrative of Claire to help people the way that she truly that she can.
It was all I could think about was the song in Frozen when Anna is with Hans and they're like, Jinx, Jinx again. Yes. Our mental synchronization can have but one explanation. And then you could just see Denny like pointing to Claire, you and I were just meant to be. Like, they're like, you can read my mind. You know what I'm talking about.
Sandwiches.
That's all I could want, is they were just so pumped, like someone knows all of the same stuff and now four hands are better than two. Like, yes, let's do this. Two brains are better than one.
Yep.
We're going to be besties.
And at the same time, like, you know, we have this, again, we have this, we do have this parallel between Claire and Bree, right? Claire, fortunately for right now, has someone that can be her voice, that, yes, can allow her to do the things that she needs to do, right? Bree, however, does not have that. And that's how they're tying this episode together, but also showing you that their journey to the ultimate destination differs a little bit. And I think that Bree, especially when she gives Roger a kiss and says, I gotta go do something.
Mm-hmm.
And she walks into that bar,
oh,
and just says, you know, and lays it down.
Yes.
And that felt like Claire to me.
Well, it helps too that Roger says all this to Bree. You know, he's able to say, hey, it was probably really hard for your mom when she was the first, you know, she was the only woman in a med school class full of men. And I loved that he was able to do that because Bree has been struggling so much, missing her parents and thinking, yeah, about them and wanting to savor this time with the letters. And obviously she goes and she reads it. So I love that Roger not only is there like saying, of course we're going to read some more letters, like you do what is best for you. But then in this moment where she tells him, listen, it was actually the worst day ever.
Yeah.
He's then able to give her the insight that Claire would have given. Claire would have sat down and said, let me tell you what it was like for me.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can do this. You are my daughter and you are strong. And we can, you know, stand up to adversity through being in the man world right now. And Roger did that. And that, you're right, is what helped prompt this courage for her. I mean, part of it is Bree doesn't get pushed,
yeah,
around.
Sure.
But knowing, like, you're right, my mom did do this. And the first day is done. And, yeah, that is worth celebrating. Absolutely, absolutely loved that.
You know, the stuff that's happening or that has happened with Bree and Roger is actually, and I know you won't get this reference, Mary, just because you didn't watch it, but it reminds me of a scene in Succession in the final season where one of the characters is talking to the Roys, the Roy kids, and the Roy kids are there trying to negotiate. And the guy that they're negotiating with says, why am I even here? You guys are just a tribute band, you know, in as it relates to their father, right? And I loved that scene because it felt real.
Mm-hmm.
My sense is I'm liking Roger and Bree because when they were in the 1700s, they felt like a tribute band. And now I can actually see the bits of Claire and Jamie in their motivations and in their actions. Like when she's like I said, mm-hmm, when she's walking into that bar or she walks out and she has this moment of realization, I felt Claire, yep, in that, right? Like that is totally something Claire would do. And oddly enough, it's in this episode where Claire kind of shuts up a little bit for the first time, I think, ever in her life.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't really, she doesn't go,
I mean, we still have her voiceover in that moment, but you're right. She's not saying, she's
not
going
at the, yeah, she's, yeah, not going at the guy, mm-hmm, right? Whereas Bree is going at the guy in the 80s.
Yes.
Right? And I like that. I think it's an interesting, it's an interesting line that they're towing with these two characters and how they're connecting them. Mm. My next question to you, Mary, is, do you think it would be better if, you know, there's obviously and clearly a lot of letters in the box that Roger and Bree have. And, you know, I really like when, you know, she's reading and she's crying and the whole thing. But do you think it would be a better narrative device if Bree read each letter every single day as opposed to like just randomly bringing these letters in? Whenever the story feels like it. You know what I mean?
I mean, she's reading a letter right now in each episode. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, like, but if there was a, like,
I'm okay.
I still think it's a little cheap that she's like, oh well, we're not going to look up the history of Ticonderoga in the book because I think we should not know. Yeah, it,
come on.
Okay, come well, on. That's her choice, and Blake, then, and you live your life differently.
No, but again, I would also say that I think it's. I think it would be a better narrative device if we had the foreknowledge of Bree says, okay, I'm going to read a letter every single day or every other day. So that when we know, when she's reading, we know that it's not just she's opening letters because it's randomly.
Okay.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
I understand.
You know, and then that
really
way.
I don't really feel that, that need, but I appreciate that you feel that need. Like, okay. I feel that. I love that for you. I love that for you.
Brianna Blake. Kills it in this episode.
All right. Let's go to Ian, because I agree. I want to save some Max for the ending. Ian, when he has the whole sperm conversation with Claire, amazing, sees his old wife, and she says, my heart is warm to see you.
You know what we're going to do?
What?
This is what we're going to do. We're going to do a professional tease, and we're going to get back to that in a minute. But first, we're going to thank our partners in crime here, okay? Let's do it. If I can find my song. Here it is. All right. That's it. That's right. It's WeBox time, ladies and gents. WeBox is the thing that you need. It's a monthly subscription gift box that's designed to share Scotland with Scots and all of you poses, Scots at heart, all across the world. That's right. If you love Scotland, you're going to want a WeBox. Every WeBox is carefully curated around a monthly theme and with five bonny gifts and treats, which are often exclusive or can't be bought outside of Scotland. It's a great value. There's a free magazine with Scotland's top journalists and a free exclusive virtual tour with internet sensation Andy the
Highlander,
plus a soundtrack to the listen to as you unbox your gifts. We, just because we're awesome, because, you know, WeBox trusts us, they love us.
And we love
them.
WeBox. We love WeBox so much.
Oh my goodness.
That they've actually given us a coupon code for you to save 10%. So if you've heard us talk about WeBox all season long, it's because we truly love, love, love their packages. It's a wonderful, wonderful business. You can go to WeBox.uk.
No, WeBox.co.uk. Gotcha.
I'll say it again. So it's WeeBox.co. UK.
Yep.
And in the coupon code at checkout, you write in the word CAST10, CAST10. You're going to save 10% off. We know several of you listeners have been reaching out to us, letting us know that you are getting your first WeBoxes. We are so incredibly excited for you. Get a little bit of Scotland directly to your door.
I just want to say here, Christina, that's on Facebook right now live, she says she just got her first WeBox yesterday because of us.
Yay!
And absolutely loved it. She's wearing the necklace that was inside the WeBox.
Oh my gosh.
Right this very second.
Oh my gosh,
second.
Christina. Love it, love it, love it. That is so perfect.
Oh,
perfect timing.
Oh,
so once again, friends, WeBox.co.uk,
yes.
And then the coupon code is CAST10. We can't recommend this service
and trust
enough.
Me, because they love us so much, they actually gave us a sneak preview of what's coming up.
Mm-hmm.
We have a Queen Elizabeth II commemorative mug, and then also Balmoral Blend Tea, because that was created by the Queen herself. So.
And
good
stuff. I see we've got our friend Dawn Marie Young joining in live, saying she just signed up for her first WeBox. And remember, friends, that this is a great idea for a gift. You know, so if you have loved ones in your life who are like, what can I get you for your birthday, for this, that, and the other thing? Be like, I want a WeBox because it's so good.
Yes. All right. So let's...
Can we go with Ian?
Yeah. What was the professional tease? Oh.
My heart
is warm to see you.
Yes.
Oh. I just want to be like, yeah, it ain't that warm. What the hell happened? We should have stayed together.
Oh.
Yeah, it ain't that
warm. Well,
if
Ian was from Boston, that's how he would have responded.
Oh,
but luckily,
man.
Luckily, he's got some class.
That pissed me off a little bit.
You know, I think it worked for him. And then, of course, seeing our swiftest of lizards,
Outlander,
otherwise known
not,
as Ian James.
Outlander does not waste time. It's like, oh, we have some uncomfortable situation that you think you're going to get into. This is going to be the first person
you
see.
So obvious. And yet perfect, right? Because that's how it is. You always bump into the ex, or you always have this really awkward situation. And you're like, of course, this is how it is.
Yeah.
But seeing Ian's smile and knowing that his sperm worked, his spirit isn't dead, that he's got this son now living out there. It's just this wonderful full circle once again of like children being raised, you know, with different dads and through different families, and like having these storylines connected is so beautiful. He is elated to know that this is possible for him in the future. And then he names the kid, his name, Ian James.
Aw, that was cute.
That was so, so sweet.
You know, and it's not, you know, 100% confirmed that he is Ian's kid, but come on, it's Ian's kid. And
I mean, there's no Jerry Springer DNA
right,
test.
Right, yeah, like, you are the father of Mark
Povich.
I loved
how he was like, my grandmother tells me not to talk about it with my dad.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
right.
Solid choice, buddy.
And I feel like solid if I was Ian, I'd be pretty pissed right now.
Not knowing?
Not knowing. And then, like, I was told to, like, vacate the area, and I didn't need to because you got a kid from me.
Why didn't you come tell me?
Like, where you been? Where you been? Like, he is a better man than I.
Aww.
He is a better man than I.
All right. So let's get to Fort Ticonderoga. All right. Claire yes. and Jamie, which, oh, it's so funny because we've been here before. We've been preparing for battle. We've been in surgery with Claire before. We've been with Claire dealing with people who have no idea how brilliant she is when it comes to this. It doesn't feel new and exciting, but I will tell you my favorite part, because it wasn't Jamie. It wasn't him being like, oh yeah, my cousin.
Yeah.
My cousin from Boston, oh, yeah. AKA sorry, my Bonnie on. Cousin from Scotland.
Hold on, we're going to play it right here.
Your cousin.
from Scotland.
The old fox, but not really the old fox. The new old fox. My second cousin. He's a great fighter. And he's going to see those goats. And I know how Scots think. And they're going to see those goats. And they're going to be like, if the goats can do it,
yeah.
We can do it with a cannon.
Right.
Let's
right.
do it. And I enjoyed this. I really thought it was fun. And for people who don't live on the East Coast, for people who don't know these bits of our history.
Yeah.
Yeah, guys.
It's a big deal.
It's a big deal. Blake, give us the most minuscule history lesson about Fort Ticonderoga.
Well, Fort Ticonderoga was actually built by the French during the French and Indian War, and is a famously strong fort that was built in the star pattern, as a matter of fact. And it was then taken over by the British, and then Benedict Arnold and Ethan Allen went up there to take the fort because they needed it to help fortify what would then between Ticonderoga, Saratoga, and then the Hudson and the whole area. They needed all these different forts. They took it without a shot. And as you had seen, the British then took it back without a shot. And then the British just ended up abandoning the fort later on. There was never a real battle at Ticonderoga.
It's so wild.
Isn't that wild?
And it's being from the East, where obviously a lot of these battles were happening, this was not uncommon. Actually, we have a fort here in Rhode Island.
Yes.
Fort Adams, which is bigger than all the other forts combined.
Yes.
This was like the ultimate one here in Rhode Island of all places. They actually have diagrams to show how Fort Ticonderoga and all these other forts could fit inside of it. Mm-hmm. And by the time they were done, like building it so it was perfect. Yeah, the war was done and nobody really came to invade it. And they were like, wow, we're so glad we spent all this money and all these resources from all the mistakes that we learned at other places.
And
but
never got used.
But they, here in Rhode Island, in our fort, once again, Fort Adams, they did extra stuff to prepare from land attacks because obviously we're on the ocean. They
correct.
Normally you're protecting by sea, but because of things like at Fort Ticonderoga, we got to see the different maneuvers that people would have to go through. And they actually created these giant hills. Mm-hmm. And you had to go in zigzag patterns because if you had a cannon and it shot straight through, it just hit dirt.
Right.
It couldn't get into the fort. So they learned a lot
sure.
from their mishaps, like at Fort Ticonderoga.
And it's not much that Fort Adams did all that much because there was
nobody ended up fighting it.
Yeah, right.
Which one can say like, yay, it's because it was that good, or
and the British took over Newport pretty friggin' easily.
Yeah,
and just stayed there.
There's the rest of the seaport. Anyway, what I really did love from this was Walter. I loved Walter in the scenes with Claire.
Oh yes.
So I loved him talking about, you know, how he loved to dance with his wife and that was part of their courtship. And then also him saying like, we didn't part on good terms. So he was obviously really sad about this, and hopefully I can put things right. And then, of course, he doesn't get to evacuate, which breaks my heart because I'm like, God, they had so many strong people. They could have just picked him up. But Claire knows best. And Claire probably knows, like, you know, we don't really have a clear idea of exactly where we're going. We're going to have to carry this guy around. His sutures could come undone. And he could be worse off. You know, you're hoping that when the British come that they'll have the morality to, like, take care of this person who's been injured. Mm-hmm. But I also wanted to know how beautifully lit Walter was.
Oh yeah, it's great. Sorry, good.
Because this, of course, is a very, very dark scene. And when you are filming or even just taking photos of people with extreme differences in their skin tone. So, of course, we've got Katrina Balfe, who's alabaster, essentially. Mm-hmm. And then Walter's character was like this beautifully deep, deep brown. Mm-hmm. And they're taking place in this surgery tent, which is dark in and of itself. They lit him in such a gorgeous way,
right?
Where his skin glowed, and you felt, because not only did they light him well for his tone, but it like brought this romantic and sad kind of hopelessness about his whole story. Like, I felt like they lit him in a way that it also brought more about into his sad story. Mm-hmm. That, yes, I left my wife. We were fighting. We danced. That's what we did. Now I can't even dance. And now I'm being left. And I just thought that directorially wise, that those scenes were done extremely, extremely well.
Yeah, totally agree with you, Mary. A lot of times, especially, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s, one of the things I think that what directors did was they misshot or mislit people of dark skin color or dark skin tones, because it's hard, right? Especially when you're in dark scenes, that dark skin tone tends to get lost in camera. So the way to combat that is to take a light and just like pummel
the skin.
That's
the way they used to do, yeah.
Correct. I think over time, though, a lot of directors, cinematographers, camera operators, they've discovered that, no, you don't overlight a person in order to get them to appear on screen in a dark scene. No, what you do is, and I think this is what Outlander did because it felt this way, mm-hmm. Don't take bright white light unless it's there purposely, right? Mm-hmm. And then just overblow the scene. Take warmer tone light.
Yes.
Project that light onto a surface, let's mm-hmm. say a blanket mm-hmm. or, you know, whatever, and then let the light do the work. Don't force the light to do the
work. And it also helped us with the emotionality of those scenes. And what was neat was Claire had her headlight, and that one was a very cool toned white, you know, so you could see like her silvers and everything, and they do that. But there's one scene where Claire's headlight, which is a cool tone one, is shining a little bit on Walter, and it did stand out where you're like, nope, that's not the right one. But whenever he is speaking, it is in such different lighting that we as the viewers just accept it. It wouldn't look that way in normal light. Like there's like different light sources that would have been the same coloring wise on these people, but they lit them so beautifully. And of course, like just the choosing of the coloring and I completely agree, Blake. And it's thanks to you, Blake, that I noticed this.
Yes, you did. You know? She brought it up independently of me. Like it was, this was something that Mary had noticed, and I'm so glad that you did, because it's really an important thing to get the lighting right for people, especially of darker skin tones, right? Like, and yes, you're right. There were two different kinds of light in that scene. That beautiful, cool white color, and then also a warmer tone light, which the illusion is that the stove light or the fire light is what's creating that warm tone on Walter's skin, right? And then to separate him from the background, they do have a cool tone right on the edge of his face.
Yeah.
Like that's all done by design.
Yeah.
And that's how they get it done. I will also tell you, Mary, this was a masterclass in getting you to care about a character that you have never met in your life. And when they're telling them, listen, we got to go. We got to leave. And
you can't go on the boat.
And you can't come on with us. Mm-hmm. And that's it. And he's like, well, you see how you see his pain and how he was like, oh, now I can make it right. Like all of those things. Mm-hmm. It is a masterclass. And this is why it's important, even for like one of the more famous uses of this is actually in Star Wars, where Obi-Wan is walking around in Star Wars episode 4, A New Hope, and you hear the random stormtroopers talking about the new T-16s.
Yes.
If you give people that are in scenes that really don't have any lines or anything, if you just give them something to say, it's more believable than random bad guy number one.
Yes.
It's more believable than random bad girl number three.
Yes.
Right? I don't know if Walter's going to be part of the story going forward. If he is, great. If he isn't, I'm satisfied knowing that this guy had a relationship, loves his wife. Somehow they got messed up. He's here for some reason, and all he wants to do is go home to make it right.
Yep.
That is enough for me to care.
And now he doesn't have a foot. Scene. Doesn't have a leg.
Correct.
A perfect and scene. It also showed, because like obviously his acting was extraordinary, and I agree with you, the bits that were his lines were incredible. And then also just the compassion that we get to see from Claire. It's not just like cutting up people and doing surgery stuff and looking in kids' little eyeballs. Like, no, she's an extraordinarily kind healer.
Yes.
At what she does. And I agree. I think those scenes were amazing, and they almost made it to my goods.
Yep.
There was so much good inside this episode that it didn't make it, but they were some of my favorite scenes of this episode.
Something else that really I liked from the Jamie and Claire storyline at Ticonderoga, really it's Jamie's storyline, because I think I have to separate Jamie and Claire.
Agreed.
For these stories, right? Because there's Ticonderoga, and then there's Claire as a doctor, right?
Yes.
Last listener feedback episode, I went on a mini rant about Claire and Jamie running into major players in the Revolutionary War.
Mm-hmm.
And I will die on that hill. I don't think that they should. I don't think they should have interactions with anybody of that ilk. They should not be altering any of the story, like any decision making from anybody from that storyline, because again, hashtag history porn. But also, I just don't believe it. It's not believable. However, the way that this was handled, for the most part, was very acceptable to
yes.
me. It's like, this guy had a concern,
mm-hmm.
brought the concern to this officer,
mm-hmm.
and you know, for the most part, like, I don't know who this guy is, and yep. I'm sure he's real, but I don't know his name.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else in the show friggin' knows the guy. And he makes this decision that alters the course of history for Ticonderoga, not because of what Jamie did, but because that's what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
He blew Jamie up. You can see that happening within the context of the history that we know is true.
Love it.
That makes sense. And this is why I was arguing against Jamie running into the major players, right? Because he never would. And even if he did, he wouldn't get any time with them. So this makes sense to me.
But in this, okay, I understand. I understand what you're saying, and I'm excited for you to continue down this route.
Yes.
And we'll see how it goes from there.
Yeah. I do question, though, like how the logic that is used later on, where it's like, well, we didn't know. How could we have known? But, well, you had a whole camp of people go get called to arms when a cannon shot on them from that hill.
But maybe he wasn't.
No one's going to mention
yeah.
this. Okay. Right. But I like what they're doing.
Agreed.
In keeping Jamie in the periphery of these people as opposed to directly involved.
And now they're back on a boat. Yeah. All right. So let's head on over to the 80s with Bree and Roger and the Max. Roger. Roger likes the 80s because there's props.
Oh, yeah. He gets to wear real jeans.
He gets hard hats. He gets panties, knickers.
Hey, I don't blame
him. Even though Bree doesn't want them. Once again, everyone has their own choices and their priorities. I would, you know, I'm grateful for a little barriers, all I can say, when you're wearing kind of pants like that. But maybe she had really soft pants on.
Yes.
Mandy. I mean, both of the kids, both Jimmy and Mandy, the casting for these children has been fantastic. A lot of times child actors are hit or miss. And I think they did a wonderful job making them endearing, making us care about them. And then Jimmy going back and forth with all the situations that he's been in as a typical child would be going through different troubles. And think about everything he went through beforehand. Of course, he's going to get up to some mischief, or at least through the teacher's eyes. So let's hang on out with Bree at work.
Yes.
Why did we need to see the Land Rover a couple of times on these cars?
This episode brought to you by Land Rover.
Like really?
Yeah.
It's necessary. Okay.
I didn't mind the first one.
But it was twice.
But the second one felt a little.
It felt like
a little gratuitous.
Pepsi inside ET or something.
Absolutely.
Yes. So she gets on over there, and the shots of the Highland. I mean, for those of us, once again, who fell in love with Outlander for everything but else because of Scotland, we got the Scotland porn.
So much good Scotland porn.
And I am so grateful to be back.
I loved it. As soon as Bear's music kicked in, I was like, yes, this is Outlander. Mm-hmm. Even though it was in the 80s, and even though they're at a dam, it just was like, yep.
Yep.
Again, the opening up the story to allow Roger and Bree to be in the 80s and Jamie and Claire to be in wherever they are, and then have them narratively connected by theme, but also by these letters, and then having Roger and Bree walk in the same footsteps as them, and then even the idea that Bree doesn't want to go to the graveyard.
Yes.
These are all natural things. Mm-hmm. These are all real things that real people do that we can all relate to. We can all look at something and say, I don't want to be a part of that.
Yep.
Because I've repressed too many memories, or whatever. It is one of the most creative things and genuinely good things that Outlander can do for its story.
However, meeting Mr. Rob Cameron, I got to tell you.
This guy.
Between the Chisholms and the Camerons, my dad, if he would go home and tell his Graham, I made a new friend at school. Oh, yeah, who was it? Oh, little Robbie Cameron. Nope.
No, we don't do that.
Now, my dad sides with the McDonald's. My mom sides with the McKenzie's. It's just, I love hearing these names and thinking back to little stories that my dad would tell me about different Scottish families. Anyway, yeah. Rob Cameron, pass me your keys. They lock her in with a flashlight that doesn't even work.
Yeah.
I would not have handled this well.
Nope.
Okay? They lock her in. And she's like, come on, guys.
That would be Mary freaking out. And this would be me.
No, God, please, no. No. No.
I would have been losing my flipping mind.
Oh, yeah.
I would have been yelling so many obscenities at these people through that little slit. I would not want to be going in that dark tunnel.
No chance.
Thank goodness she has her matches, because Bree loves matches.
Oh, so she invented matches.
Yeah, so she's got the longest lasting matches I've ever seen in my entire life. And she knows, all right, dams. I do dams.
I do dams all the time.
I'm going to go turn on the lights. I wouldn't know. I don't even know where my breakers are in my own house, and I've already touched them three times. I would have just sat by the door crying. I would have failed.
Yeah.
I would not have done well in that situation.
No, you would not have.
I would be taking out a little Swiss Army knife trying to find the screws on that massive door and trying to take it
out.
That's
true.
That's what I would have done.
And then, once you got out, you would not have just sat down and said,
I wouldn't have gone to dinner.
Who do I got to lock into a thing to get me here? No, this
is how you know that Bree is not a Taurus, okay? Because if that was done to Jamie Fraser, would he go to a pub and say, don't call me a hen? No.
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 Nope. No, no.
Oh, my gosh.
It would basically
I'm thinking about all the things we would have done.
It would be,
welcome. to Jurassic Park.
That's what it would have been.
Yeah.
It's friggin' dinosaurs coming out of Mary.
Yeah. Oh, like, my gosh. I'm already percolating about all the different things I would have done to Rob Cameron and his friends.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Oh, man. I would have done some nasty things. I would have put diuretic in their beer. I would have, like, made copies of their keys and then just showed up at their house jiggling keys outside the window. Oh, I'm a little knuckle V. Like, yeah. I would have done some bad stuff, man. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's my bad stuff is diuretic and a beer. But nonetheless, she's in the tunnel, knows how to turn right. And
all of the junk mail to their mailboxes.
Did you know? Oh my God. I would have signed them up for so many political junk mail things.
The worst magazines possible.
Yes, like dirty stuff. And just like, you know how magazines have those little like free sign up for this? Yes, yeah. Rob Cameron.
He even sounds like a dink. What's your name, Rob Cameron?
Yeah, I would have given out his phone number. I would have done bad things.
You just tell right away. First of all, you never trust a man with two first names. Never trust a man with two first names. Okay. Secondly, his name just sucks. Rob Cameron. You just know this guy's bad news.
Okay, so she's in the tunnel and she's like right, left, right, left, right, left. Eeny, meeny, miny, moe. She does something that reminded me so much of Claire. She closes her eyes and she's thinking. And I remember how Claire was closing her eyes saying, oh, I can see the surgery now. If I had to operate on Mandy and I would do this and I would do that.
Oh, yeah, interesting.
It reminded me so much of Claire her being able to kind of recall things that she's learned in the past. So she, of course, goes right. And then we've got some weird blue stuff.
I got a theory about that. So I'm gonna hold back.
Good.
I'm going to hold back. We're gonna get
to the end.
She runs
through it.
Yes.
And I'm like, I would not have chosen that either. I wouldn't have. I got to tell you, some weird blue stuff, got some sounds going on. I would have chosen a different path.
I choose life. Thanks.
Obviously. Obviously. And I wonder how many people, like, what did you think was going to happen to her? She ran through it. What did you think was happening?
You want to know my honest opinion?
I do.
I thought that she was going to walk through it. And when she walked out of the tunnel, she was going to be... I thought it was going to be camera trickery.
Mm.
Like the tunnel would have been an opening from a rock formation as opposed to an actual tunnel.
Yes.
And she would be back in time.
Yep.
That's what I thought was going to happen.
And I think that that is why I didn't like the cut immediately following her getting out and looking over the lock and everything, because then it was like, oh, wait, is she back in time? Because there was nobody with her.
Yeah.
You know, she's just looking out. So
there's a part of me. Well, yes, I thought she was going to time travel, but they also had that shot that did pan down. And when you look to the bottom right, there was a big like building or whatever.
Okay, yeah.
So that told you.
And she's still in the dam.
Correct.
But I wondered for show watchers only how that made you feel and what you were thinking.
Well, so. Do you want to share? Well, I have a theory in a little bit. We're almost done here, okay. So I'll get to it in a little bit.
Okay. Sorry.
I think that this episode and this season so far has been a great refresher. Well, it's been a refreshing feel for me. I think Outlander season 5 did it very well, where it was like, okay, there's this major thing that happens at the end of the season where it was like, all right, kill them all. What happens to Claire happened to Claire. Like, that's all bad news stuff, right? Mm-hmm. But sometimes I feel like in Outlander, in other shows, it's not just Outlander, it's other shows. Like, this really happened in 24. 24, like, it was famous for this. Each season needed the next big thing. And it needed to become bigger and more dire and more dark and more like, but this season feels natural.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like, okay, yeah, like there's this thing at Ticonderoga, like a big thing happened. Roger and Bree went back to the future and they're living their life. And not everything is just Galus getting her head cut off in Abindawe, whatever the hell it was in Jamaica. Like, not everything is Claire being taken away to be hung as a witch or, you know, like, no, it's just living life that are natural to the characters. And yet at the same time, like in season 4, I think it went too far in the other direction, or where it was just like, yay, wee, ridge life. And no, like, you need, I think season 7 is a good balance.
It's a good balance, yeah.
So far.
And, you know, we get to have some of those little moments. She goes home and she has this cute little dinner with her family. And it was so cute. Roger made dessert. He's got the champagne. Her mommy's first day of work. And the kids are so excited. And she tells this story. I was shocked that she didn't say anything more to Roger when they had adult only time. Like, obviously, she doesn't want to say in front of the kids, today stunk and this is what happened. But she then tells Roger it wasn't good. And
yeah, you feel like she
doesn't she say there was this blue stuff?
Yeah.
You know, some creepy, weird stuff, Roger. Like, not only did they bully me, but by the way, I mean, maybe. Are we supposed to just think that, like, Bree was just so overwhelmed with her anger and wanted to stand up for herself against her coworkers that she didn't say it? But I just find it weird that she didn't talk to him about it.
She buried the headline in all of this, in my opinion. Now, if Roger didn't know about time travel and all this weird sci-fi stuff, and again, by the way, the fact that Roger and Bree are separated from Claire and Jamie now is a very clear and observant acknowledgement of time travel and like the magic of time travel, mm-hmm. and that connection is it's like in your face now. Yeah. And that is Outlander to
me. Yes.
That is very Outlander.
But I agree with you. Like, this is your fellow magic time travel person. Why don't you say, holy smokes?
Yeah. If he didn't know.
Yeah.
And like, she came from the 1700s.
Yeah. She didn't want to seem crazy.
She didn't want to say anything to anybody. I get it. But he knows that's her husband. They
He's
went through time together.
He's done it a couple times.
At least two or three times now. I feel like she buried the headline. You know what I would do? I'd come home and be like, Mary.
Yeah.
Dude, you will never guess what I saw at work. Like, there's this thing. My head almost exploded. Yes. It was blue. I ran through it. Like, you want to come check this out with me?
Yes.
Let's see if your head explodes too.
Yes.
Like, that's the first thing I would do.
Agreed. It was very weird.
I'm not going to say it's as bad as Jamie telephone thing, but it's like, if Jamie telephone is 1A, this is 1B. Like, how do you not talk to Roger?
Bree doesn't share. Exactly. Yeah, you're saying this just doesn't make sense. Claire not having an expression afterwards, and now Bree not sharing this with Roger. Completely agree.
Yeah.
And to me, I'm like, okay, just her fiery spirit is taking over right now, and that is what she's focused on.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, one thing at a time. Roger is building some cute little car or cart. Do you see that when he's outside? And I love how they always have fire, whether it's at the dinner table or he's got an outside fire right there. And I wonder if that just like continues to make them feel cozy and feels like it's back at home, you know, hearing the crackling, smelling the flames.
I feel like it does, because remember he brought that little pot thing, mm-hmm. like, oh, just, you know, remind us of home. I like that.
So he's outside,
nice little callbacks.
And Jamie comes and he says, oh, I got in trouble. My classmate said, we're going to burn in hell as papists. I talked in Gaelic. I got in trouble. I got shaken. I got cursed. I got my hand slapped. And then Roger has, once again, dad of the year, saying, you're not in trouble at all. We're going to sort this out. And I loved that.
Yeah.
I loved how Jamie went from feeling like he needed to hide because he got in trouble in school to now his dad saying, no, nothing that you did was bad.
I'm not mad at you. No. I mean, not you. I'm mad with somebody else.
We are going to sort this out. As a family, are going to figure this out.
Love that.
Roger, of course, gives Bree a pin for her first day present. Got that cute little hidden drawer. And he says, I'm so proud of you, and I'm sorry I didn't make it clearer from the start. Well done. Snaps for Roger. Yep.
Just finally getting it.
We then, of course, have Mandy screaming that the Knuckle V is outside.
Yeah.
Blake.
Like I already said, Roger not doing the whole...
Oh, yeah. He doesn't bring out any kind of a weapon. He's too focused on his rumpy pumpy.
Well, who wouldn't be, honestly?
I know. That was, I'll take two steps out, and then I'm going to come back in, put on the hat. I think I need some inspecting. And Bree should be like, well, how well did you inspect the yard? How about you do that? Go wear your hard hat outside.
Why don't you get that hard hat in your
bag? Did you look in the trailer? Did you even look in the trailer?
Did you open the door to the trailer?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, man.
Yeah, somebody must be outside. Okay, guys, this is kind of a big deal.
But you know what I will say? Roger, I'm not going to yuck anybody's yum. He wants her to wear a hot hat?
That's fine.
That's great stuff, man.
I'm just...
No, what I'm about to say is, I'm getting more now from Roger and Bree in these episodes than I have for 5 seasons. And I'm finally so thankful that I can actually get a scene where he's like joking with her and saying, oh, maybe you should put your knickers back on, and like the whole thing. Like,
yeah.
All it's really good stuff, man.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
Oh, I'm pumped. I'm so pumped.
That's why I think I'm looking more forward to Roger and Bree now than I am Claire and Jamie.
That's okay. That's okay, man. You know, everything can't be your favorite all at once. And of course, then we end with Bree, and she goes to the bar, tells them, you do that to me again, I'm going to get you fired. Don't
Should have happened right away. No, just get them fired all the way, the whole way through. Goodbye. See you later. Just like the Bushes. Goodbye. I don't know why she... I don't know why she holds back.
I mean, then she'd have to hire people and be awkward.
So what? That's their problem. That ain't her problem.
I mean, it might be. We don't know. We don't know the ins and outs right now. Okay? No.
She's just the inspector. She's not in charge of hiring people or nothing. You got to... whatever. But it's okay.
But it ends and it fades out with her speaking to the Cairns.
Really good stuff.
And I love, like, having her voice and it just starts with the credits. With her still speaking with them.
Yep.
Beautiful.
Really good stuff. All right. You got anything else you want to talk about in this episode, my love?
No, I don't.
I think we're good. All right, you ready for some outlandish theories?
I am.
Here we go. All right, I got a couple of theories. All right, you ready for this?
I am.
All right, here we go. First one. It is an absolute guarantee that one of, if not all, of the Macs are going back in time again. Because we have the weird blue... thing.
Buzzy thing.
And something tells me, like, somebody, and then this is kind of like a, this is kind of like a follow-up take to a previous take.
Okay.
The person who is the Knuckle V, whatever they are.
Yeah.
It's not just some random dude. Okay. It is absolutely somebody that came through that portal thingamajiggy. Like, totally came through that. And is just like walking around because they got no idea where the hell they are or what they're doing. And he or she sees these kids. And
I'm
going to
pause for people who are listening live. This is a spoiler-free show. So if you do know the future, just mull it over with me as we listen to Blake.
And the reason why Weird Jemmy is calling the thing a Knuckle V is because the person that this is happening with believes in Knuckle V's, whatever the heck they're called. And he's like, yeah, I'm a Knuckle V. Yeah, I'm a snipe. Clap three times.
Nice up reference.
Thanks. Yeah, you're welcome. It's totally somebody that like believes in this stuff. And that's who's eating all the food. And that's who he's referring to. That's the person that Mandy was afraid of. And he's like, yeah, I'm a Knuckle V. Yeah, sure. Yeah, why don't you go get me some chips while you're at it? sorry, crisps. And then also my other theory is, well, so yes, let me round that out. Roger and Bree, or all the Macs, or Bree or Roger, one of the Macs or all of them are going back in time again. And I feel like I know that because it's too much of a good thing to have them in the 80s separated from Jamie and Claire.
Okay.
So they have, the Outlander's totally putting them, one of them back. But like, again, you don't introduce, this is Chekhov's, this is Chekhov's wall of light, okay? You don't introduce the wall of light without it having to serve a purpose in the third act, okay? Something or someone is either come through it or they're going back through it to go back in time.
Interesting.
All right?
Interesting.
My next theory is that this guy, Rob Cameron.
Yeah.
This guy... ain't nothing solved with Rob Cameron. Yeah, he bought her a beer.
Calls her gov.
Whatever. Like I said, you never trust a man with two first names. Okay? You don't do it. This guy is bad news. And I wonder if this guy can actually travel through time too.
Interesting.
And I wonder if he knows about this wall of light thingy, doesn't know what it is, but he eventually hears a conversation of some sort between Roger and Bree, because maybe Bree finally does go to Roger and be like, dude, Chekhov's wall of light's here, you gotta go check it out with me, let's go see if your head explodes. And maybe this guy hears it. Something happens with Rob Cameron about all of this. This guy, he's not there for funsies. And it's also not for funsies that he has the same name as Jocasta, right? Like that whole thing, it's all related.
My grandma would just be saying, just stay away from the Camerons.
Yeah, just stay away from the Camerons, all of it. That guy, especially when they got two first names, you just don't do it.
Oh my God.
So.
Oh, well, collectively, we all, as the book readers, say interesting.
Interesting. So that is that.
Mock me.
Please hang up and try again.
All right, Marvin.
All right, my friend. Well.
What do you got? You want to close this out?
Yeah, I think it is time.
All right, hold on. Actually, you know what? Vamp for me for 1 second.
I'm going to need you to bring up our jointhenerdclan.com for our thank yous as I'm on my mirror phone.
Well friends, you got to vamp. Hold on.
We want to thank you so incredibly much. I want to take this moment to remind you to be on our email list or our text list so you know when we go live. If you'd like to join the live conversation, you can simply go to maryandblake.com. A pop-up's going to come on up and ask you, hey, do you want to learn more about Outlander in our emails? We do not spam you. Honestly, it's just me or Blake sending you an email, letting you know when a new podcast episode is out or if we are going live. Of course, you could follow us on our social media channels on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. We're in all the different places and doing all the different things. And if you are on Facebook, head on over to the Mary and Blake group. We would love to have you over there to join in the conversations. And thank you, of course, to our friends at jointhenerdclan.com, where we are, what did you say, 9:30
right now.
We are 9:30. Join the Nerd Clan members strong. We're trying to get to that 950 mark. We're
931 right now.
931,
just
yay!
Saw it.
And
thank you to Maggie Lankford, who just joined.
Thank you, Maggie. As I said, you can join for as little as $2 a month, and it truly goes to support this mom and pop podcast shop. All right, do you have our friends?
He's pulling it on up. I do. Hold on one
And I
sec.
Also would love to give a little reminder, friends, that something you can do that is completely free is head on over to Apple Podcasts. No matter where you listen to your podcast, you can head over to Apple Podcasts, search Outlander with Mary and Blake, and leave us a written review. The stars are wonderful, okay? But the written reviews are what give the juice, and also it just warms our hearts. We've had some rough communication with people recently.
Eh, whatever.
No, it's not whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
To you, it's whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
Okay? I'm soft-hearted.
You are.
Okay? And I'm just going to say.
I will say that it bothers Mary.
It bothers me. It bothers me. We've had some not so nice things being said, whether live or otherwise.
I tell them to just go pound sand.
And I wish my skin was as thick as Blake's, but it hasn't been.
That's
so
okay.
Just know, friends, that the internet is dark and full of terrors, but if you wanted to leave us a podcast review.
Make Mary's day, make her feel
it,
better.
It honestly would. And just if you are someone who like has a bone to pick, just remember that this show brings us light and love, and we're real people who read the stuff that you write. And it sucks sometimes, so please be nice on the internet.
Well, you can write mean things, but I also have something that I can say to you, too. Go screw.
No,
like, that's what it comes down to.
Whether it's, like, shaming people beyond about size or doing things like that, it's just, I'm just giving a call out, okay? Be nice.
Yes. All right,
just
fine.
Be nice.
You ready to close this out?
Yes.
All right, let's do it.
Yes, Blake, thank
okay,
you.
Okay, can I just
welcome.
Say something crazy?
Okay, so just picture Claire,
I love crazy.
Denny.
All my life has been a series of
doors
in
my face.
Males
who think they're surgeons.
And then suddenly I bump
into
you.
A Quaker! A Quaker! A Quaker!
Because, like, I've been searching my whole life
for surgery tools.
And maybe it's the
I've got my own
talking,
me too.
Or the chocolate fondue.
Here we go.
All right.
This is the part.
Oh, sorry, here we go.
My place.
I see your face. And it's nothing like I've ever known before.
Surgeons and open doors. Okay, here we go. Let's thank our patrons who are most generous friends at jointhenerdclan.com.
Yes. All right. So let's thank. Here we go. My mouse is crapping out.
You got this, baby.
All right, we got Anne and Bobby and Dana, Joanne, Kathleen, Katie, Kirsty, Lisa, Marianne, Sarah, Siobhan, Susie Q, Tara, Vicky, Angie, Barbara, Brittany, Dina, Hannah, Jennifer, Caitlin, Keelan, Martha, Meredith, Peg, and Tracy. Thank you so very much for all of that.
We appreciate you all. Have a great night, and we'll be in touch soon. On that note, my name is Mary.
My name is Blake.
And love is an open door.
Say goodbye to the pain of the past. You don't have
have to feel it anymore. Love is an open door. Love is an open door.
Life can be so much more.
Picture Claire and Denny like tossing scalpels at each other. Bandages. All the boiling water.
So much
them.
Boiling water.
Crazy. Will you marry me?
Bye, guys.
Can I see something later? Yes! Oh, wait. Now Little Mermaid is playing.
Oh, my gosh, Blake.
Sorry. All right. Bye, everybody. Bye.